want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
That's right. We're as mad as hell, and we're not going to take this anymore. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network. I tell you, it has been an extremely, extremely busy week. Ed Martin will not be joining us tonight. He's still trying to run that business of his that Barack Obama built, and he has some out-of-town visitors coming in, some clients coming in, so he's busy, you know, whining and dining, doing what you got to do to stay in business, man. It's just the way it works. So he will not be joining us, which means very simply this. It is now an open line Tuesday night. We're going to get into a lot of stuff tonight. Some will make some people very uncomfortable. Others will be happy. I've got to tell you straight up right now. Got y'all scared, didn't I? The number is 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. If you guys want to be heard on air, we already have people lining up in the queue. For you guys that are in the queue, if you want to be heard on air, we appreciate it. But don't forget to press that number one on your dial pad so that we know you want to be heard. I'll get you in as soon as I possibly can, and we'll take it from there. In the meantime, a lot going on in Louisville. People have been asking for many, many years for somebody to step up and tell the truth about Louisville politics. I say that for a reason. Last week, Mitch McConnell was chastised, and as everybody who listens to this show knows, I'm no fan of Mitch McConnell. I'm don't really a fan of either party. I call them both the uniparty because I feel like the Democrats and Republicans really have no difference between them that will allow them to make any meaningful effort towards fixing things for us. Remember, the problems that we have, you can't blame on George Bush alone. You can't blame on Barack Obama alone. You can't go all the way back to Abraham Lincoln and blame him. I mean, the reality is that both parties created these problems, and their unwillingness to work together to fix them has put us in such a boondoggle that America literally is on the verge of bankruptcy, and people are suffering each and every day. Here in Louisville, Kentucky, however, you know, people have been knowing behind the scenes about some of the insider politics and the people involved in their histories. They involve pedophilia, sexual deviance, criminals, you name it. And the prominent politicians, the Democrats here in Louisville, continue employing these people on your tax dime. And they're out there screaming that, no, no, these guys that did this whole illegal tape recording, alleged illegal tape recording, I should say, that's for the lawyers to keep them happy, are sitting out there, they're trying to make the argument that Mitch McConnell says some bad things in a private strategy session. Now, for one thing, the things that they're accusing Mitch McConnell of doing, talking about Ashley Judd's mental problems and all the other things, you know, these are actually very mild discussions in these political private campaign strategies. I know this. I have sat in with union meetings when they're discussing the candidates and how vile and vulgar and how downright mean they will get trying to make sure they support the Democrats at all costs, because there's not a union leadership alive that will support a Republican for doing the right thing. I have sat in political strategy meetings on behalf of Republicans and Democrats. At one time, I was a Democrat, a blue-collar union Democrat. I have since grown up and realized how falsely following that logic was. But as somebody who's seen both sides of the coin, I assure you that what went on with the Mitch McConnell strategy session was irrelevant. The relevancy of this whole argument was due to the fact that Mitch McConnell was taped and it was publicized by illegal means. Now, what makes this whole story fascinating, and this really gets kind of interesting, is when you look at the players involved. At LouisvillePolitics.com, I have broke Yes, I have. I have broken tradition and have decided to start outing the party politics and the party leadership in Louisville. You see, nothing goes on in Louisville Democratic Party like this that the Democratic leadership or the scum behind the scenes, because those are the people who make all the real things. You know, Greg Fisher can go on TV. John Yarmuth can go on team. They can claim plausible deniability about everything. But it's no different with anybody else. Every campaign political elected person, doesn't matter if you're involved in that political process, you've got a line of defense. If you're at the top of that chain, it's called plausible deniability. In a particular case of the Mitch McConnell tape, you've got Curtis Morrison and Sean Riley being accused by a very low-level executive committee, and that's a stretch member of the Democratic Party, Jacob Conway. These guys illegally taped this conversation. Jacob Conway outed Sean Riley and Curtis Morrison. But the liberal media didn't care about how they got the information. They wanted to sit out there and try to chastise Mitch McConnell. Only the Democrats in their own ignorance and in their own dirty dealing and their own dirty minds could actually make a mortar out of Senator Mitch McConnell. But what's fascinating is these two guys that made the tape, made this tape on February the 3rd. Supposedly they taped this from outside the doorway of this political strategy session. Yet it wasn't leaked until last week. It wasn't leaked until last week. You have to ask yourself why. And considering the content of this tape has to do with Ashley Judd and questioning her mental capabilities, you know, Ashley Judd was no longer a factor. Ashley Judd had already decided not to run for this office, so she was no longer a factor. So why 2 months later do you decide to go ahead and put a tape out there that basically is meaningless that you obtained by illegal means? Curtis Morrison and Sean Riley are not that smart to do that on their own. Sean Riley in particular is very connected. He is connected to Chairman Bill Ryan. If you go to LouisvillePolitics.com, you'll see the pictures. You'll see the story. There's a three-parter up right now. Make sure you read all three parts. It's going to outline everything. But when you get into these players of this game, we have to look at who they are. Okay? In any situation, when you're a so-called journalist, I've been called a journalist. I've been called worse. I consider myself just somebody who tells it like it is and deal with it. But whenever you decide you're going to do a story, you have to look at the moral and ethical questions that arise. One of the first questions you ask yourself, is this relevant? Is this information relevant to the story? Is it relevant to the situation? Is this information relevant or does it have any bearing on those involved? So if you have any ethics whatsoever, you withhold names of people who may be sources for whatever reason. Either you don't want to make them part of the story to protect them, or you've agreed to confidentiality. Thank God for the First Amendment. You know, you're really careful with what you do here. In this particular case, Jacob Conway has decided to go public and went on a national TV spree. You guessed it. A national TV spree to talk about this whole situation. And in short order, Jacob Conway actually became the story himself. So the mainstream media is trying to push Jacob Conway in everybody's face for outing Progress Kentucky's Sean Riley and Curtis Morrison. And at the same time, they have tried intentionally to divert your attention to the contents of the conversation, not the illegal way they were obtained. We've come a far cry from the 70s, haven't we? Does anybody remember Watergate? Nixon was blasted for the Watergate scandal. How dare you illegally tape anything? Nobody cared about the content. They were insulted that an illegal tape of somebody of that caliber could be involved. But ironically, they don't care about Mitch McConnell basically being involved in the same situation. He's being chastised for being the victim of this, and the Democrats have made him a victim and a martyr. It is so funny. It is beyond belief. You guys can call in 858-683-1326, 502-805-0334. Don't forget you guys in the queue. Hit that 1 on your dial pad if you want to be heard. Love to talk to you. Martin's not here tonight, so we got plenty of time to kill. You know, but when we look at this stuff in play, since Conway decided to go public, and for full disclosure purposes, you guys need to know, I am familiar with Jacob Conway. Have spoken to Jacob Conway on a few occasions. He has actually called into this show on more than one occasion about things that were important to him. I know Sean Riley and Curtis Morrison. I've broke bread with these guys. Do I consider any of them friends? No, but they are acquaintances. You know, Sean Riley, Kurt Morrison have been on my radio show along with Martina Konecki, who I have the utmost respect for. This has nothing to do with Martina whatsoever. But, you know, they were doing some preservation group stuff and things like that just a couple of years ago. So on my old show, they were guests. And we broke bread together. We sat down at Buckheads over on Bardstown Road. At that time, I used to bring all my guests in early, and we would go over there. And we would go over, you know, we kind of almost pre-plan a show with our guests. I didn't want our guests to feel uncomfortable on air with us. So it was a great chance to meet and greet over appetizers. And I also wanted to make sure that whatever issue was important to them was heard. So that was the purpose of doing the business that way. I don't do business that way anymore. I refuse to. So when we look at this in play, I have to make sure I disclose that, yes, I do know all of these guys. But while I disclose that, understand, okay, that sometimes those choices you have to make are made based on current and relevant data. In short, what I mean by that is Jacob Conway went public outing these two guys. He decided to go on a national spree. He made himself the center of attention, and Sean Riley and Kurt Morrison the center of attention, except nobody's really paying attention to these guys. They're still trying to attack McConnell. That's what led to the series that we're running on LP. At Louisville Politics, we've always basically focused on two things. You know, politicians and accountability, and political news. News that's going to be important to the people out there. We don't go out, we don't do the fluff piece. I don't care what bathing suit, you know, Britney Spears is wearing today. I don't care if Kim Kardashian's butt looks like a daggone, you know, super wide train caboose because she's pregnant. I don't care about all that. That's for the Inquirer, that's for TMZ, that's for that. We deal with specific issues, and we get into the serious issues, and we get into the discussion. That's the way it is. Jacob Conway has been known to me for a very long time as someone who has been in trouble with the law. Jacob Conway used to work for Commonwealth Attorney Irv Mace. Jacob Conway pled guilty to theft, served home incarceration and everything else. He stole taxpayer money out of the office and got caught. So, you know, you've got to ask yourself, is this relevant? Until now, it wasn't relevant. Jacob Conway, until now, has been a private citizen since then. This has been a few years ago. Remember, this is before LP started. So we didn't, or I didn't, I made the wait-and-see attitude decision. I did not think that it was relevant to out Jacob Conway's past because Jacob Conway had nothing to do with our tax money. He wasn't an elected official. He's a low-level vice chair, LD chairman, or vice chair LD, within the Democratic Party, which means he doesn't even have voting rights within the party. So when we look at this, was that a situation where Jacob Conway had to be outed? And quite frankly, no. However, during that period, we also knew that Jacob Conway had basically called himself a male prostitute to folks like Jimmy LaSalvia of the Log Cabin Republicans, who's now part of GOP Proud in Washington, D.C., and Lindy Casebeer, part of Governor Steve Beshear's administration here in Kentucky. Again, were those information relevant until now? No. There wasn't any story or anything else we were working on that required us to out these kind of situations. But remember, Jacob Conway went public. The Democratic Party has tried to distance themselves from Jacob Conway, Sean Riley, and Curtis Morrison. Chairman Bill Ryan has yet to make a statement here in Louisville. They sent out a generic response Friday, disassociating themselves, saying they don't know anything about these guys. Even Jacob Conway tried to go on record and say that, he was doing this to protect the Democratic Party because these guys aren't associated with the Democratic Party. Yet, of course, we proved at LP that they really are involved in the Democratic Party. Sean Riley is a vice chair of the Metro Democratic Club here in Louisville as of last year, as of 2012. We got a great little picture of the whole website showing it, which leads me to the next guy, Jeff Noble. Now, for those of you who don't know Jeff Noble, I'm going to inform you of who Jeff Noble is. Jeff Noble is legislative aide to current Metro Councilman Brent Ackerson. Jeff Noble has one serious long history of his own. But the reason Jeff Noble comes into play here is Jeff Noble, to insiders, is known as a Democratic operative. He's not only Metro Council member Brent Ackerson's legislative aide, he also does opposition research for John Yarmuth, or has. We've got the proof of that. He is tied into just about anybody and everybody that plays here in Louisville. Steve Mogry, former alderman. Bruce Ewing, we'll get to him in a minute. All these different people. And all these different people have histories that should concern everybody in Louisville. To say that Louisville is little Chicago when it comes to politics would be an understatement. It would be an understatement. We are, for all intents and purposes, the Kentucky version of Chicago. There's no doubt in my mind about that. So when we start getting into these players, then we have to start wondering what's going on. So for background, here we go. Jeff Noble, in 1989, the Courier-Journal's then reporter, Rick McDonough, did a story about Alderman Steve Mogry, who had hired both Jeff Noble and Bruce Ewing as ombudsman for him. What he didn't do was tell the rest of the aldermen anything about their past. In 1988, less than a year earlier, Jeff Noble had admitted to soliciting an underage 16-year-old boy for sex. He was on a 2-year probation and, pled guilty to this, and Steve Mogry, less than a year later, hired him. Now, why would he do that? Because Noble had been an operative with the Democratic Party and knew secrets. There's no other way to decide that. Everything on this radio show is my opinion. If you want the proof, I'll give you the proof, because you need to read the stories. I can link it all together. In today's world, Noble would be charged with being a sex offender and be on the Kentucky Registry. Back then, it wasn't so big a deal. But he pled guilty. He got probation. Was hired by Steve Mogry, who admitted that he knew all about these indiscretions of Jeff Noble's, and hired him anyway because his good friend, 4th Ward Alderman at that time, Cyril Algier, had asked him to. You wouldn't think that would be such a big deal. Just one thing, right? Not such a big deal. Well, it is a big deal. Because at the same time, there were other things in Noble's past that told us we had problems. Noble was pulled over driving a city-owned vehicle on a suspended license. In addition to that, Noble was picked up by the police for trying to pick up a burglar hustler. Now, why does Noble come into this story at all? Because Jeff Noble is great friends with Jacob Conway and Sean Riley and Kurt Morrison. And Jeff Noble is one of the insider, dirty-dealing Democrats behind the scenes in Louisville. In Louisville. Now, this guy's involved with all three of these people, so you're thinking, okay, big deal, coincidence, right? Wrong. There's always more to the story. You just have to keep looking, folks, and that's what we do. So as we know this, Steve Mogry made the decision to hire Jeff and take care of him. Kurt Morrison, the one who is now being accused by his co-person, Sean Riley, of being recording this all on his own, never mind that Riley, whether he pushed the record button or not, is still aiding and abetting illegal behavior, Let's throw that aside for a moment. But Kurt Morrison is real great friends with Jeff Noble. You can go to part one at LouisvillePolitics.com and find that for yourself. You know, but in Kurt Morrison, who has his own blog, we're not going to mention here, there's a link on the site, you know, had mentioned from one of his own articles in June of 2011 that if you know Jeff Noble, then you love Jeff Noble, because to know him is to love him. You know, Noble can't deny being friends with these guys because of pictures tying everybody together. But Noble also admitted on another Morrison article, you know, when they were talking about Occupy Louisville, because Curtis Morrison was real big in the Occupy Louisville movement for whatever reason, you know, he posted a comment on it that says, the first message I received about Occupy Louisville was from our Democratic political friend, Sean Riley. So there's your link. All of these guys are linked together. You know, and of course, Morrison had to keep going on in a future article, another article that he wrote on his website, that says a nice litmus test that I like to use to see if someone is compromised is to ask Louisville political strategist Jeff Noble. See, Noble is involved in everything, folks. There's no doubt about that. He's involved in everything, all the way up to and including Congressman John Yarmuth, and we're outlining this as setting the pattern this week. That's why we've got three parts of what right now looks to be a 6 or 7-part series, and may go beyond that. Okay? So this is why. Noble works for everybody, and he's involved with these so-called little no-good slugs like Morrison and Riley, who are acting all on their own, and Jacob Conway went rogue and told on them. This is nuts. This is nuts. So we've got to think about this going forward. That's just the beginning of this situation. That's just the beginning, because I tell you, you know, as you go forward with this, then you start finding out other things that really greatly concern you. Bruce Ewing, I mentioned him a minute ago. Bruce Ewing is one of Steve Moggrey's closest and dearest friends. Former Alderman Steve Moggrey. There's a reason Steve Moggrey did not run for Metro Council once merger was accomplished in Louisville. There's a reason for that. We'll divulge that at LouisvillePolitics.com in the very near future. We know why. We've got a statement accordingly. And we'll divulge it when we need to. But for now, let's ask ourselves this question. Why is Steve Moggrey continuing to be associated and friends with somebody like Jeff Noble or with his good friend Bruce Ewing? Up until 1977, Bruce Ewing was a Catholic priest. You know, priests were adored by the community. Everybody loved their priest. In 1977, Bruce Ewing was forced out of the priesthood for alleged raping of a 15-year-old girl. Why is that relevant today? Because it's a pattern of behavior, folks. In 1983, Bruce Ewing owned a bar called the Double B Bar or Tavern, a bar that was shut down for 45 days by the ABC board, the Alcohol Beverage Control Board here, or the commission, or whatever they call it now, for a gambling violation. You don't shut down a bar for a gambling violation for 45 days unless it was a serious event. I guarantee you they weren't playing bingo in the back room. So here's a former priest who'd already been accused at that point, or at least suspected of, raping a 15-year-old. Now running illegal gambling out of the back of a bar. This guy is a man of God? Obviously not, right? But more importantly, by 1983, he had also been a city mechanic for 2 years. How did he get his job? Ask former Alderman Steve Moggrey. Then in 1989, when Steve Moggrey decided to hire Jeff Noble, he decided to hire Bruce Ewing, knowing about his history, knowing what was going on, and made the decision to hire him anyway. Now, since 1989, everybody says, well, that was a long time ago. This is stuff we know. Why are you rehashing the past? Because it's important to rehash the past to know what's going on right now in the present, and hopefully you guys will get smarter and stop yourself in the future. Since 1989, Bruce Ewing has been convicted of child rape, been convicted of raping a 15-year-old child. This was in 2007. It took them 30 years to finally hold this scum accountable. He is now on a Kentucky sex offender registry. Look it up. But miraculously, Steve Maugre, who is real big in the Catholic Church, and again, we'll tell you more about that going forward in future articles, because I don't want to ruin the surprise for those who are following the series. But miraculously, Bruce Ewing shows up after 2007, a convicted pedophile pops up at St. Therese Parish, run by a guy, Father Anthony Olgis. Father Anthony Olgis is known as Father Tony to most of us. Father Tony was my priest at St. Polycarp Church back in the late 80s and early 90s when I attended and thought church was the way to go. Everybody knows about the Catholic Church and the pedophilia scandal and hiding priests and all the promises that the church made and the millions and millions and millions of dollars that the Catholic Church has had to pay out to victims of their own, of the church's doing. This didn't just come out of insurance funds, folks. Every time you pay a 10% tithe to the church, they're taking your money and paying a victim that they're still hiding today. You need proof that they're still moving pedophile priests around and letting them around children? Go no further than St. Therese Parish. Steve Maugre is revered there. Bruce Ewing got to land there. Bruce Ewing was on the board there, a parish board of directors. These people work fish fries, bingos, you name it. Anybody that's ever been to a Catholic event knows that those things are uncontrolled. Parents let their kids run free. They can't do anything with them. They don't know anything about it. Go to a church picnic. Go to a church fish fry. Your kids run all over the place because everybody knows everybody, right? No parent watches their kids 100% of the time at those places. And yet, pardon me, and yet pedophile Bruce Ewing was allowed to be involved in that unsupervised. Knowingly, by Catholic leadership like Father Tony Olgis. Now, how does this still connect to Steve Maugre? Well, Steve Maugre is still involved in politics. As I told you, he chose not to run for the Metro Council for a reason, but he still is very powerful and wants to be connected. Mayor Greg Fisher announced Steve Maugre as one of his advisory leaders. Councilman Jim King, who is a benefactor of the threat against Steve Maugre, and you can read more about his story at our sites as well. I'm the one who filed the charges that held him accountable for illegal campaign finance. Louds Steve Maugre. Jim King touts Steve Maugre's name in newsletters throughout his district all the time. Basically, he's telling the world what a great human being he is. I don't know why a great human being would hang around with criminals, sexual predators, or sexual deviants, and call one of them one of his closest friends, as he did with Bruce Ewing. Sometimes, folks, you are the company you keep. So there's more to Steve Maugre than you know and you're going to know. There's also more to the church than you know and you're going to know. But here today, even today, the Catholic Church is hiding these priests. Steve Maugre sits on a neighborhood association board with none other than who? I'm sorry, Bruce Ewing sits on that board with none other than who? Judy Maugre. Steve's wife. She's the vice president of the Germantown Paris Town neighborhood group. Bruce Ewing is the secretary on that same board with the same group up until 2011, or he was in 2007. Put all this together. How is this guy still able to be around kids in the Catholic Church when the Catholic Church is telling the whole world that they're not allowing that anymore? There have been people fired from their job for finding out about it, and the Catholic Church fired them from their job to keep them quiet. And they got away with it because the Supreme Court says the Catholic Church can do what they want to in their employment because it's all free speech. It's all First Amendment. Fair enough. But when we look at all of these things, when we look at all these things into play, we start seeing a pattern of behavior. You start seeing a pattern of behavior of these sexual deviants. These guys who shouldn't be around kids, pedophiles, sexual deviants, criminals, thieves, all running together in the inner circle, folks. That's your Louisville Democratic Party. Now, I would love to sit here and go after everybody else and do all these different things, and we are. But the one thing everybody was asking, and has been asking for the last couple of days, is why are you doing this now? It's very simple. These things have had to be told for a long time. The whole story with the illegal tape of Mitch McConnell and the Democrats trying to deny knowledge of it have opened the Pandora's box into identifying who's pulling the strings. It's going to go all the way to the same group of people we've been outing for the last couple of years, including Jim King, Mayor Fisher, Jerry Abramson, Steve Beshear, and on up. By the time this is all said and done, I'm going to let you guys know about federal grants that are being illegally used that the city is lying to the feds about. They're not doing things right. I'm going to tell you about stories coming from the West End, where West End so-called leadership is keeping the West End from getting development moving ahead like they should be allowed to, keeping the people down, keeping those people poor, and keeping them in a nasty neighborhood in many cases. Why am I doing it? Because nobody's had the guts to. Nobody's had the guts to. I do. Will there be repercussions for this action? Of course. There's already been repercussions for this action. I've spoken briefly about my LMPD problem on the show. I haven't went into too many details. But there's going to be a lot going forward with that. But that's a political repercussion for what I do every day. Because I hold people accountable, they're going to continue screwing me. It's already cost me. Today I'm unemployable because I've got a bad background check until this mess gets cleared up. The people in this town are scared to advertise anything too much because of political backlash. I've been told that by the players. So at this point, the way I look at it is real simple. If you guys are going to open the Pandora's box, and once you sit here and try to claim innocence, when you're not innocent and it's easily proven, I'm going to be the guy that's going to out you. Sorry about your luck, but somebody's got to. Nobody will. So regardless of the implications, guess what? You're now being named. You're now being associated, and all of you are now going to be held accountable. For the good people in the Democratic Party out there, I hope this benefits you going forward. Because it's the crooks in the Democratic Party who continue taking care of the crooks, who continue keeping them elected through legal or illegal means. They continue hiding up the underground sex clubs that include a warehouse that burned down over off of Maple Street, everybody may be familiar with, not too long ago. And they continue hiding the people involved. It's keeping the good Democrats who want to do something better and make a positive change in their community. It's keeping them from having the opportunity to do so. And for the bad Republicans, don't worry, you're coming too. But it's time we straighten up. If we want to live within a two-party system, it's time we straighten up this two-party system. And it's time we started getting accountability. And it's time we started saying as a people, as one, as citizens, enough is enough. We're going to do our part here at LP and MVM. We're going to do our part. We're going to lead the way to local accountability and state accountability. And if that means a few people are knocked off of their high horse and out of office and a couple more maybe put in jail, so be it. Go to the federal pen, do your time. Chicago hasn't got anything on Louisville. But it's time everybody knew that. The citizens of Louisville, from west to east to south, deserve representative government from people who are sincere in their efforts to do so. Democrats want to open the door to making that happen? No problem. Ed Springsteen at MVM said, here we go. We'll be right back. We're going to take a quick break. your calls when we return. Don't forget to click that one on the dial pad. We'll be right back.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
Love this. The Eagles and Don Henley performing Get Over It. You know, they really nail it right on the head, I have to tell you. I'm very impressed with that song. I've always been a great Eagles fan, and that song just sticks with me every time I listen to the stuff that's going on. You know, in the meantime, you know, we spent the first part of this show trying to add a few things, give you guys a little bit of information you can use. You know, but we're going to go further in the very near future. Pay attention to LouisvillePolitics.com. Don't forget to join our RSS feed or our news list or anything else, and this stuff will be delivered right to your inbox. You don't even have to search for it. You know, and the same thing with our radio network right here at MVM Radio on Blog Talk. You know, join us. Everything will come right to you. You don't have to wait for it. And you can also join us on Stitcher as well. You know, but we look at all of this stuff. We look at the political arena, and we have to start thinking, where do we go from here? You know, where do we go from here? You know, we've got a corrupt church here in Louisville. We've got corrupt politicians all the way up to and including Jim King, Steve Mogre, Mayor Greg Fisher, John Yarmuth. We'll get all of those tied in by the end of the week. We've already got the stories written, folks. You know, there's a lot of people that listen to this program. I've already got the calls that started first thing this morning. The first thread I got was at 7 a.m. You know, and that's okay. That's okay. It isn't the first time I've been through the rodeo. But I will tell anybody that's listening here that does actually go to this level, that knows the people that are making these threats, and I love them because they're always, you know, on that, you know, unlisted phone number and all that other stupid stuff, or they send you email through services so you can't backtrack them. That's cool. But, you know, they better understand, you know, these stories are written in advance. You know, so we've already got the first six parts of this story written. It's going to go all the way up to Congressman John Yarmuth. Now, the seventh one is a little extra bit that I'm working on. It isn't done yet. But I can tie everything else. It's already done. It's already written. It's ready to go. So, you know, for anybody that's making a threat, save your breath. If I shut up right now, there's an automatic system that's going to go in place that's going to make sure that these things get delivered. They're going to make sure that these go forward. So the threats do no good. Because I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to stop. That's just the way it is. But believe it or not, there is other news going on in the world today. Yep, I know. It's a shocker, isn't it? Something could actually be happening in a world that we don't know anything about. You know, let's talk about this. Last week, just about 5 days ago, you know, we had a nice little story coming out. Let's go into the politics at the federal level for a minute. Everybody remember Jeremiah Wright? President Barack Obama's pastor who loved to talk about racial stuff, the white man was bad and kill a honky and all that good stuff. Turns out his daughter, Jerry Wright, was accused of participating in a fraud scheme, imagine that, led by a former suburban police chief and the chief's husband that involved a $1.25 million state grant. Now, this came out of the attorney's office in the Central District of Illinois. And, of course, all these people, what? Chicago. Don't worry, folks. We got our own problems with Louisville with federal grants, so we're going to get into those down the road, and Mayor Fisher and a whole host of other people. But that's an interesting story. Why? Why? Because Barack Obama has done everything he can to try to distance himself from the Reverend Jeremiah Wright. After using him and bragging about him in his own book, then he tries to distance himself from that family. And, of course, we know better. We know better. Now, Jeremiah Wright's daughter is now accused of taking money from a grant for her own personal use. Guess what, folks? The apple doesn't fall far from the tree, does it? And in other stories, yep, there's even more. You know, right here in Louisville, if you guys remember, you know, I filed the charges that got Jim King accountable, cost him the mayorship. I filed the charges that had Judy Green impeached. She left office. The late Judy Green, I should say. May she rest in peace. Well, now the Metro Council Committee, late last week, has went ahead and took up the initial steps to on late Wednesday so that they could go ahead and try to oust Barbara Shanklin. She's up on impeachment hearings. So we've got a lot going on there. Of course, we've already talked about the Mitch McConnell tape, which is a big joke. You know, but what it was, I'll tell you one thing that's really fascinating about this Mitch McConnell tape, though. And it's fascinating to me anyway. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just looking at things the wrong way. But it's fascinating to me that this Mitch McConnell tape, you know, that the first thing that happens is CNN and everybody else go out of their way to try to sit here and say, hey, the right wingers, you know, this was all a plant. This was all a plant. Mitch McConnell planted it himself by using these two inept guys. I'm curious why anybody in the right mind would think that Mitch McConnell would actually plant this himself. It makes no sense, but I thought that was funny too. You know, and speaking of right-wing propaganda, let's talk about another story going on right now. Happened yesterday, and for those of you guys who are listening right now, you know, I've got to go and say I am sorry. And my prayers to the families of the victims and those in Boston for what happened yesterday. At least three people are dead that we know of. The last time I checked, there was at least 141 injured. Right at a dozen people lost limbs from what looks to be some homemade explosives. You know, apparently, from all reports indicating today, there was a pressure cooker involved and ball bearings and all kinds of different things that made that thing explode. So I guess the next logical step for the Obama administration would be to outlaw the pressure cookers. You know, we've got to ban pressure cookers because they kill more people than guns do, right? So, you know, that might be the next step. But for the people in Boston, my prayers are there. You know, but for the rest of you guys, you know, we've got to look at this. What is it that makes people get to the point that they don't value human life and they think it's okay to do something like this? The last word I had is we don't have anybody out there that has been arrested yet. There was a rumor yesterday, I don't know if it's been confirmed, that one guy at one of the hospitals in Boston, the women's hospital in Boston, was being questioned. He was there with some burns and stuff like that, was being questioned about this, was not arrested. We'll have to find out more about that as we go forward. But another interesting thing about this story, though, and the reason I bring it up is the left's reaction. The left's reaction. In no time at all, before we even knew what was going on, we've got this tragedy unfolding before us on TV. This tragedy is unfolding before us, and we've got news, Esquire, and a few others sitting out there saying the right wing, planting this whole right wing mentality, or planting this as foreign terrorism when it's clearly domestic terrorism. They were doing everything they could to pin the blame through terminology on somebody else. It's mind-blowing to me that they would decide to go ahead and try to turn this into a situation where we're saying that the right wing is responsible for this, the right wing extremist or anything else, when clearly we don't know yet. When has the media stepped back in recent years and said, you know what, let's make sure this story is exact before we put anything out there and get everybody all riled up over nothing? 384 number, you're on the air. Hello?
Hey, Ed.
Hey, how are you?
Hello, Ed.
Yes.
Hi, Ed. It's Rob.
Hey, Rob. How are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. I thought I'd call in, just let you know. I was watching the news, and there's going to be an executive order released here shortly banning pressure cookers.
Funny you tuned in just now, sir, because that's exactly what I talked about. You know, I mean, it makes sense, doesn't it? We've got to protect the children, right? I mean, we've got to ban the pressure cookers so that we can protect the kids who might be inadvertently harmed by some sick wacko out there who might decide to make a homemade bomb of hydrogen peroxide, ball bearings, or whatever else they put in that damn thing. You know, but it's okay. Now, you know, I want to make sure that our callers and our listeners understand this. It's okay, though, Rob, to ban the pressure cookers, all right? But it's not okay to ban pedophiles from being paid with your tax dollars to be around children. I want to make sure that's very clear, because our government says it's okay to hire pedophiles to represent your children and put them around children at church bingos and fish fries and stuff. But we've got to ban these mean, evil guns. Everybody knows we're joking here, Rob. But I tell you, in all honesty, you know, some of the conspiracy theorists out there today are mentioning this, and I really want your opinion on this. They're mentioning this today, you know, as it seems like every time the government starts getting questioned about you know, things that deal with buildup, weapons buildup, things like that. And you think about this, for at least the last month, Congress has questioned, and we've even mentioned many times on the air, the Department of Homeland Security acquiring all of this ammunition, these mini tanks that they're putting out on civilian streets. They're wanting to know why the Department of Homeland Security, I mean, they're even talking at DHS about, you know, putting drones for surveillance over American neighborhoods. You know what I mean? And whenever anything like that happens, mysteriously, we get these kind of crazy events, like the Boston Marathon. Is that coincidence?
Well, I was involved in a conversation earlier today with some former veterans, and you know, years and years ago, the war colleges did studies on, you know, the usefulness of the U.S. military and civil disturbance operations.
Right.
If the military could be counted on to do certain things, you know, because at the time, you know, they actually respected the posse comitatus laws, and you know, the military had no training in this. The military is designed to do one thing, to kill people and break stuff. So they came to this conclusion, it was probably 25 years ago, that the option would be to create an intermediary force. But who to, you know, how are the feds going to be able to justify this? How are they going to be able to fund something? Because local police is not really, at the time, not really beholden to the federal agencies. So it was money, grants, mm-hmm. mandatory training. They got them by the pocketbook over the last 20 years. And then ever since September 11th, you know, they created the Department of Homeland Security. Now, I'm sorry, but they could have picked a better name. Homeland Security, that just, for the libertarian in me, Homeland Security, it just strikes me as something from the communist era.
I was going to say, it sounds very communistic, doesn't it? When you look at that, I mean, let's look at the reality here. You know, the first thing you do when you want to take over is to disarm the people. And it seems like since 2011, they continue coming up with these events, and they continue taking more and more security away from American citizens. Remember, this is something I want everybody to remember as well, because in Boston yesterday, they were already on a high security alert. The FBI admitted that they had threats. And the way that they admitted that was saying that they knew of no credible threats is what they put out in their statement. So they might not have considered a threat credible, but it's clearly obvious that there were threats involved. You had bomb-sniffing dogs that had went through the entire last 2 miles of the route, all the way up to and including where the bomb went off right at the finish line. There were bomb-sniffing dogs and everything else right there. During the whole event, and yet somehow it still went off. Does that aid the conspiracy theory?
Well, you've got to understand that they bombed this target, and whoever it was either was extremely smart and well-planned or extremely lucky, because they came in after security, you know, the peak air... You know, when all the cameras were there, when the winners were there, when the biggest crowd was there, when the mayor was there, the governor was there, everybody was, when all the celebrities were there and cameras were live, they couldn't get in because security was so tight. So they waited an hour or two. And they got the average people. They got the average Americans.
Right.
The cameras
they didn't
were
get
still
the big
there.
Players, right.
Right. And the point of terrorism is not to kill the celebrities and create martyrs. The job of terrorism is to make the general public feel unsafe and not confident in their government. And what this has done, it's caused us, after 10 years, you know, we got hit again, to turn around and say, what did you do wrong? I watched the briefing today, and, you know, they asked the police chief of Boston, the police commissioner, and said, well, now that you're going to review this, you know, tell us what you did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I felt sorry for the poor guy, because from what I saw and with my experience as a former planner and as a retired military and police officer, I can tell you that I saw Boston police did one amazing job.
Oh, I totally agree.
And then the first responders, I watched those tapes over and over again. They didn't duck. A few of them flinched, you know, like any normal person would.
Well, sure.
But they instantaneously turned toward the sound of the incident and began reacting and using their radios and communicating and helping people and establishing perimeters and gathering evidence.
Well, I want to point this out, too. I want to point this out, too, though, Rob, because, you know, the regular civilians, if you will, they weren't first responders, they weren't trained Boston police, they weren't anything. You saw many acts of heroism, if you will, for lack of a better word, from the common average man. I mean, Bostonians, you know, jumped right in and helped everybody they could. I mean, you saw strangers going up to help strangers. You saw strangers carrying people away from the site. You saw strangers giving first aid before the first responders had a chance to even get there. So I want to make sure, you know, the Boston people themselves need to be commended as well, because in such an intense situation, to have a group of people come together like that for the greater good was really – that really was great for me to see. Even though it was a tragedy, it was still good for me to see that people still had that kind of compassion. Go ahead.
Well,
I saw
an amazing – even the civilians that were there, I saw – I didn't see panic and mayhem. You know, I saw one guy, they were interviewing, then people were climbing and screaming and running. You didn't see it. You didn't see the panic in the mass running of the crowds that the terrorists wanted. You saw people basically, you know, since we've been taught as a kid, stop, drop, and roll. That's what you saw.
Right. Is that kind of sad, though? I mean, when you think about this, is that kind of sad? Because have we become accustomed to this kind of behavior? Have we become numb to the effects? I mean, you know, typically you would think that there would be panic in the streets and everybody would be screaming and hollering and going crazy. There's always some that are doing that. But for the most part, Bostonians didn't. So it's kind of a sad reflection on society today, is it not?
Well, I've been in crowds that have panicked before. I was working, you know, not against my will, one of the waterfront parks that one of your favorite former council people used to sponsor, and there was no security on site except for on-duty police.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody started shooting in the crowd, and two or three people got shot. And this was a crowd of close to 2,000 or 3,000 people. And, you know, we all just had to step behind, you know, trailers and stuff and let the crowd run past us, because that was a reaction back then. You know, take off running like crazy.
Right.
I didn't see that. I hate to say, I mean, I've seen crowds panic at Thunder over Louisville. And there's nothing you can do when a crowd panics. And people don't understand that this happens. You know, you get usually some kids start, you know, do something stupid or yell or scream or holler, and the next thing you know, everybody's breaking and running. But you didn't see that in Boston.
Right.
And that's, you know, it just amazed me, and I'm so proud of you know, the people that I used to serve with, my brothers and sisters in arms, who, you know.
I've got to agree with you there, because I think that Boston, from all indications, that the Boston law enforcement officers, first responders, and the civilians, I mean, that you talk about a community coming together in an effort to aid others in an intense situation. Everybody, it was chaos, but it was almost organized chaos. And you know, the police officers there deserve to be commended. I know I rag on police officers a lot right here on this show, deservedly so. The ones I rag on deserve it. But for the most part, it was a great example of what the good police officers are all about. And I'm with you. They need to be commended. They really do. You know, going forward with this, though, from what I understand, the guy that was at the women's hospital that they were questioning in regards to this, so far has not panned out as being behind this. Have you heard any updates on anything lately? I admit freely, I've been busy the last few hours with some other things.
According to the FBI in their news conference, he was released, and he's no longer a person of interest.
Okay.
He was released without being charged with anything. You know, my gut is going to tell me that when push comes to shove and they find out who this person is, it's going to be an Eric Rudolph type situation.
Right.
Lone wolf, maybe two. I agree, you know. With
I mean, it's almost like a
former
Timothy
FBI
McGee
profiler. It's going to be a guy about 30 who's disenfranchised with everything. He did maybe a year in the military, was kicked out, had discipline problems. I think you're going to find a lone wolf situation, a lone wolf or very, very small independent group, because nobody's claimed responsibility. If the Taliban had gotten hold of this or Al Qaeda, it would have been all over Al Jazeera. You've actually got groups over there saying we didn't have anything to do with it.
Right.
So I'm pretty sure when push comes to shove, it's going to be some kind of lone wolf domestic situation. Because, you know, it was a homemade device. For a homemade device, timing it where both of them go off almost simultaneously was pretty significant.
Yeah, well, they went off basically, from what I understand, 12 seconds apart. And, you know, and as you pointed out, there was, I think, somewhere around 25,000 people that ran the Boston Marathon, you know, and more than 20,000 of them had already completed at that time. So if the intent was to bring to the biggest amount of destruction and the biggest amount of attention to yourself, you know, I would think pure
speculation. Well, the crowd that they hit, and for the sake of just being able to talk, I'm going to say he, There's a crowd that this whoever this person was that orchestrated this bombing. The crowd he hit was, you know, the wheelchair people.
Right.
The average Joes who barely qualified for the marathon, the families running in groups.
Well, that's it. Once again, a terrorist went after the weakest people. I mean, there's no other way to put this, right? Because that's what terrorism does. You know, if you look at James Holmes in the Colorado shooting, he goes into a theater, it's dark, and opens fire because those were the least resistant and the weakest and easiest target. You know, if you go to Connecticut and Sandy Hook, it's the same thing with Adam Lanza going into this school and shooting these children. They were the weakest and easiest targets. So it's the same thing with this bomber. From the psychological standpoint of profile, I'm kind of in agreement with you. I think this is going to turn out to be a lone wolf who's disenfranchised, who has some problems. I don't think it's going to be the conspiracy theory that everybody wants it to be. And I certainly don't think it was, you know, Al-Qaeda or any kind of outside terrorist, because those people would be quick, as you pointed out, to take responsibility so they can get the maximum effect from the publicity. Plus, they wouldn't have worried about the weakest. They would have put it off right there at the front of the damn line when the winners were going across the line. I firmly believe that. So it's interesting. What do you think is going to happen going forward with this?
The FBI and you know, these guys are experts. They will run down whoever did this. They'll figure out what Home Depot the BBs were bought at. I mean, they will know by the time this thing comes to trial or they have the indictments ready. You will know everything there is to know about that device, where it was made, where the metal was mined at. That's how good they are. They will eventually track this down. They will comb through every bit of photographic proof, because if those devices were brought in late, Fox News has already spotted what they believe is one of the devices in one of their video feeds, because it was a package wrapped in some sort of bag next to a mailbox.
Well, it's interesting. Right, It's interesting as well, because didn't they have some kind of training exercises going on with explosives the same day as the Boston Marathon? Because
you
they're
know,
still trying. Go ahead.
I read that, and all of this, that makes absolutely no sense. Why do they have, unless they were taking it, you know, hey, we got everybody together, let's do this training exercise, you know, while the thing's winding down. I can see that, but why in God's name are you going to set off a live device in downtown Boston during a Tier 1 event? It'd be like setting off a bomb, you know, a smoke grenade during the second half of the Super Bowl.
Right.
I hope that person, you know, gets some sort of serious discipline for that, because that caused genuine panic and confused a whole lot of people.
But does that also feed into the whole conspiracy theory angle, that maybe that's just a lie perpetrated to try to help cover up?
It could be that they found a device, or what they thought was a device, and were going to detonate it, and they were making, you know, playing like it was, you know. I've seen people come up with that idea, and generally the best thing to do is you just be honest with people, because it always turns around and bites you in the butt.
Well, I know,
I mean,
the last report.
If we found a device and we're going to blow it, you can then say, hey, we found something suspicious and we're going to blow it.
Right.
Well, you don't have to come up with, well, we had a training exercise and we're going to. It doesn't work. And especially like in this situation, when it turns around and bites you in the butt hard.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And you know, that's interesting, because, I mean, they did say, from what I understand, they did say that there was three other devices that were found. One of them they tried to say was an incendiary device. That was the mayor of Boston making that claim, that it was an incendiary device, not an explosive device, that was found at the JFK library right there. So, I you know, there's still conflicting reports about everything. And I guess, you know, to kind of bring this back full circle, the reason that I mentioned mainstream media in the first place, because these are conflicting reports. It's fascinating that you have CNN, Esquire, and a few of these other left-leaning so-called mainstream media news journalists out there trying to use terms like right-wing extremist and things like that, trying to set the stage to blame Tea Partiers. There's been claims that the Tea Party was behind this. But yet the reality is, even today, we've got conflicting reports a day later about three different explosive devices being found. One is supposedly an incendiary device, not a bomb. We now know more that these were pressure cookers and things like that, so it's clearly domestic terrorism made with common everyday things. So the point is, we don't have the full story, and by the mainstream media going out and doing all of this, to me, they're doing a disservice to the American people, all in an effort to help the liberals sit there and scream, we need more security, so now we've got to outlaw pressure cookers.
Well, there's one dyed-in-the-wool truth about combat and critical incidents, that first reports are always wrong.
Sure.
Because people are reporting with emotion, and they're trying to, you know, be on TV. You know, they're trying to be the first person after the tornado on TV. You know, it's like these people, their legs blown and stuff, and it's, you know, trying to make it sound like it was downtown Baghdad in 2004. And you could plainly see on TV. I mean,
right.
It was a bomb that went off. Maybe, you know, there's some people hurt, you know, people with shrapnel wounds, but most the doctors today said, except for one person, all the amputations happened in the hospital. You know, they just had to finish, of course, what the bomb started. But
of course, as the story was going on yesterday at the very beginning, you know, they were reporting that there were body limbs, that there were limbs from bodies flowing all over everywhere, which was a lie, as you just pointed out. The amputations were largely performed at the hospital. So that's what I'm talking about, man. What is it with the media today that they have to sit out here and try to sensationalize everything in their quest to be first on a story, only to have to go back later and tell the whole world they were lying?
Well, I listened to a really, really interesting speech from a guy, and I forget the name of the organization he runs, but it's a free, privately funded reporter pool.
Mm-hmm.
Out of New York, and he, you know, what has happened with media is, you know, 50 years ago you had newspapers owned and operated, you know, and they sold advertisements, and the whole thing was circulation, and they had investigative journalists, and they had editors, and they had writers,
mm-hmm.
and they sent beat, you know, the beat reporters out with the police, and they, you know, if we all know the, you know, the Daily Planet with Superman. Y'all, every city had two or three newspapers like this.
Right.
Now, you know, Louisville, here we are, a metropolitan area of almost 2 million people. We have one major newspaper, and its content they purchased from whoever that is. They've let go almost their entire, you know, writer pool. They have very few writers left.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's less than 10% the actual writers they have here in Louisville. They get almost all their stuff off the feed.
Right.
It's all automated reporting, and if you don't have the big headline in bold that says, you know, body part found on second floor window, you know, then their little bit's not going to get picked up, and they're not going to get paid. It's all about eyeballs and ads and.
See, nobody does what we do. Nobody does what I do at LP anymore, Rob. They don't write original content, man. That's the whole
purpose. The actual investigative journalist, because there's no interest in long form investigative journalism anymore.
Right.
Where, you know, they put five or six reporters on a project and they create a database and
mm-hmm.
they go through this, that, and the other. They vet it through legal, and then, you know, the New York Times or the Washington Post picks it up and it becomes national. And it's a 6-month process to write this story. There is none of that anymore. It is, they hire these kids out of college for next to nothing. They ship them off, and they're like, okay, you're the New York reporter. You're got to watch everything 24/7. And if somebody so much as trips and breaks their, you know, nose on the pavement at this event,
right.
I want pictures and something, you know, to grab eyeballs and get people to turn the channel back to us.
Well, there's
no
doubt.
That's all they're doing.
Let's go to the phones real quick before I run out of time here. We're getting late. Mayo, real quick, man. What's going on?
I just wanted to chime in on what he had just said. I mean, I think you and I briefly talked about this once, but it's like repeat and regurgitate. And the, BBC I love for their reporting, but API, they actually have a guidebook, certain terms, you know, their writers can use, just like they can, you can no longer use illegal alien, you have to use undocumented immigrant. You know, things of that nature. And, you know, it's people, you know, like you, Ed, that get out there, you know, nose to the grindstone and actually do the reporting and give the facts to the people. While these other guys, like I said, it's just like it's repeat and regurgitate. And,
they canceled primetime television last night for 2 hours so they could repeat everything that they'd said the previous 7 hours before. They never said anything new.
Talking heads.
Well, and that's nothing new, though, and that's the whole thing. And what's really ironic about the whole situation is, because today, you know, Rob, you had mentioned a minute ago about how the news used to work. You had five or six reporters work months on a story, build this database and all this other stuff, and do the real investigative things. Back then, you really had to do a lot of work. I mean, no offense, folks, but if you wanted to find information, you know, years ago when they were still doing this, you were all over the place. You were going through city archives. You were going through the Louisville Public Library. You were going to all these different places. You were spending a lot of money on travel, a lot of time going through
microfiche
for paper and all this stuff. Yeah, you know, and all this stuff. Today, the Internet is the most effective tool that you have. It is so easy to get information today. You know, now, don't get me wrong. I spend hours and hours and hours on everything I do. But instead of spending 6 months to put a story together, I could put a story together in 6 days or 6 hours, depending on how deep I want to go. So, you know, it's really fascinating because with technology so readily available today, you would think that these news journalists would be doing more in-depth stories instead of less, wouldn't you?
Well, the problem with the mass media is they are part of corporate conglomerates.
Mm-hmm.
They are no longer freestanding journalistic enterprises. They are part of corporate conglomerates, and they are so interwoven with the corporate world, they cannot write stories. This guy, I'm going to look it up and send you the link. He's retired Washington Post managing editor.
Okay.
When the savings and loan scandal broke,
mm-hmm.
they had such a hard time vetting the story past their board. This one, you know, the newspapers could not get the story out. And it took bloggers to break it because the boards were stonewalling the stories. The reporters and the editors had the information for 2 years, but they couldn't get it out because the board stonewalled them because they were terrified of what would happen to their stock prices.
I can't tell you how many reporters here in Louisville, well-known named reporters that do all the lead stories on every major news station here in Louisville, Channel 3, 11, 32, and 41. I can't tell you how many reporters I've talked to from each one of these places that have told me that they have had to kill stories based on some of the same information that I uncovered, primarily when it involves Democrats in Louisville. That is how bad it is. And I know that sounds bad. It sounds like I'm always picking on Democrats. Right now I am, because right now they're the problem. But it's interesting to me that if you have a story about Jerry Abramson and his lovers, if you will, again, my opinion, folks, for now, I'll prove everything later. But, you know, in my opinion, you know, all these stories are out there that they're not allowed to report or put names or anything else together on because it will be detrimental to the Democratic local party. That's absurd to me. You know, the journalism, there's no such thing as honest journalism anymore. There's no such thing as honest journalism anymore.
Well,
that's what's giving rise to people like me and bloggers and things like that. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, didn't mean to cut you off, but just to interject. I mean, used to, weren't there laws? You know, there couldn't be a monopoly of greater than at such and such area, whether it was newspaper, radio, or TV. And, you know, like your other guest said, now everything's tied to corporate. You got Disney owns ABC, which owns so many affiliates, and it's, you know, whoever's at the boardroom is saying, oh, yeah, this story is okay, instead of the reporter saying, here's my story, here's the facts.
Right. They have so relaxed who is it? I forget. It's not Gannett anymore, but at one point in time, Louisville was ran by Clear Channel owns Louisville as far as broadcast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do. You can't get a radio frequency here in Louisville unless you want to pay Clear Channel megabucks to do it, and not many people could do it. I mean, Clear Channel owns so many things here, it's unbelievable. You have a monopoly on your over-the-air radio, even for me. You know, when I was doing my show before, I literally had to buy time with WKJK at Clear Channel Radio. I had to buy my airtime because I could not go out and buy a frequency and be able to use it. You know, it's just the way it is. And that's what they've done. You know, they have given these conglomerates, and you know, that you mentioned, Rob, all the power in media, so they get to control the media. And that's what it's all about. You get into Murdoch, Soros, and a few other ones, and you'll find out what I really mean. Guys, I apologize. We are fast out of time. I went way into overdrive tonight, and I appreciate it. Thanks so much for the calls. I've got to get out of here. Rob, Mayo, I appreciate it. We will talk to you guys very soon. For the rest of you guys, tomorrow night, Dale the Truth will join us at 7 o'clock, as usual, on Wednesday night. God only knows where we're going to go then. Trust me, Dale the Truth and I get a little crazy on occasion. And don't forget the TNT Thursday Night Truth at 7 o'clock on Thursday, as well as our good friend Ken Moman on Sunday night at 7 with Liberty Unbridled. As you can tell, Sunday through Thursday night at 7 o'clock, there's always something happening right here on the MVM Radio Network. For the rest of you guys who are listening to this show on podcast, remember, this is my personal show, the Ed Springsteen Show. All views and opinions and anything else on this are strictly that, my views and my opinions. So to keep the lawyers happy, we're going to let you know that because this show is going to make a lot of people angry. I'm entitled to my opinion, I'm entitled to my view, and I've got great First Amendment rights that are still left in this country to some degree. So do you. That's it for tonight. Take care. Have a great night. We'll talk to you very soon. In the meantime, enjoy.